Blog Talk Radio.
Excuse me, Captain Kirk.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Scott.
What a charming negress. Oh, forgive me, my dear. I know that in my time some use that term as a description of property.
But why should I object to that term, sir? You see, in our century, we've learned not to fear words.
May I present our communications officer, Lieutenant Uhura?
The foolishness of my century had me apologizing where no offense was given.
We've each learned to be delighted with what we are.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to issue this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lot of...
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, and once again, good evening. Folks, this is the Grindhouse Mashup, where the lines between Afro Nerd Radio and the comic shop are actually blurred. We will have the uncanny Daryl B. in attendance. Of course, you know him from the comic shop, but we'd like to hear what he thinks about other issues besides the pulp. So he is going to sit in with us for the entirety, the 2 hours. So, boy, are you in for some fun. Also, we're expecting friend of the show, filmmaker, comic creator, Sir David Walker. I think he's waiting outside the studio doors even as we speak, so he should be fun as well. Let's go to a quick nerdcore groove. We're going to do things a little bit different. Normally, our listeners are expecting, Black Rock Urban Alternative. Most of the time, you're expecting nerdcore music. Since this is a mashup, we're going to play everything. So this is going to be a quick groove. Then we're going to get to this pulp-flavored discourse. It is the Grindhouse. This is Lowrider. Lowrider by Slapback. Bear with us for a few moments. Prepare for the discourse. And again, let's groove.
Hello.
All right. Okay, enough of that. Once again, slap back the classic Lowrider. This is the Grindhouse Mashup, folks. The call-in number, once again, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Of course, we have our own podcast Avengers, our own podcast Enterprise crew. First up, there is the captain. Captain, you're needed in engineering. Let's get to it.
DC can make some cartoons, can't they?
Yes. Yes, they can. I mean, we may have seen it a bit early through rather nefarious means, but, they can do the cartoon thing, can't they, Captain? I'm not so sure about the damn live action, though. That remains to be seen. That's what I'm scared about. What the hell are they going to do with these dates being moved around? I'm really interested to hear what our friend the uncanny Daryl B thinks. So let's open up his door as well.
But even with their cartoons, you could see all the problems with Warner Brothers and DC and how they handle business. And I'll get into that in a second.
Yes, sir.
And I believe, waiting in abeyance patiently, we have Mr. David Walker from Super Justice Force. So I bring him in. I'm afraid I don't have the pomp and circumstance like I need to have. I'm not ready for that. Dave?
Yep, I'm here.
Yes.
All right,
welcome,
Dave.
Sir. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be
nice
back.
Nice to finally meet. We saw you last week, and that was great fun. I know your time is limited, so I want to really get into it. Folks, I mentioned this during the Midweek and Review show. I mentioned that Daryl B. and myself, sans the captain, I think our communicators were misaligned. So next time, for the third one, I'm assuming that the captain will attend. But
yes, sir.
We got a chance to check out the second annual Black Comic Con, courtesy of the Schomburg Museum, and we saw Mr. Walker there. So I just want to kind of talk about that. What were your impressions? Tell us about your experience with it. I mean, were you there last year?
No, I didn't make it last year, so this is my first time this year. Yeah, I thought it was great. I had a really amazing time on a lot of different levels. So to me, it was, I've been going to cons. I mean, really, I've been going to cons most of my life. I started going when I was a little kid just as a fan, and then I started going as a creator probably about 15, 16 years ago. So I've been to, New York Comic Con. I've been to San Diego. I've been to WonderCon. I've been to the Alternative Press Expo. I've been to a lot of them. And while this one wasn't as big as those, it was, in its own way, it was so much better than all of those.
Yeah, I would agree. Daryl, I know you were excited. What were your thoughts about this?
My thoughts are I missed the one last year. We all did. We all missed the one last year because we heard about it late. But from pictures from friends that went, I commented to Mr. Walker that, it was like four times the amount of people that I saw from the last one. And I owe Mr. Walker, you're going to get some payback from me, getting me emotional over a character named Kid Spectacular. But I digress. Folks, you got to just pick up Super Justice Force to get what I'm referring to, Kid Spectacular. Anyway, but what I enjoyed, and I commented to both Mr. Walker and D-Bert, I commented to both of you this, the female-to-male ratio at the con. It was almost a 50-50 breakdown. And with that, props to those PAL teachers and who brought their wards and their students over, especially for the panels, to give the next generation some knowledge from smart folks like Mr. Walker here. I enjoyed that. Back to you,
Beaver. I have a question for Mr. Walker.
Yes, yes.
Why, what aspect did this make this better than the regular Comic-Con?
Well, you know, I've been trying to wrap my brain around that, and I think part of it was, if you go to San Diego Comic-Con, if you go to even New York Comic-Con, it's infiltrated by the mainstream, obviously, you know, the big companies, Marvel, DC, and the crowds that are there are actually far more diverse than people would think. Especially New York City Comic Con. I mean, I was amazed at how many people of color and how many women that I saw there, and yet the content that's being generated and sold is not reflective of the audience, right? So you may have, say, 50 to 60% audience of color going to a show like New York Comic Con, and San Diego isn't far behind that, but yet maybe 2 to 3% of what's being generated is for them. Right, and so there's this feeling of exclusion, both of to the creators and the fans, that this really isn't a place for us, even though it is our place, and we have just as much right to be there as anybody else. And so what was at the Schomburg was just like stripped bare of all that. It was like, this is a place for us. We're welcome. We don't have to. You know, we don't have to look for excuses as to why we're there. We didn't have to apologize for being there. We were there because we love comics and we love animation and we love anime and we're nerds and we're geeks. And there's nobody looking at us like, what are you doing here? Which happens a lot at some of these other shows. You know, it's like black folks can't enjoy Star Trek or Star Wars. And that's always been problematic to me. But at this event at the Schomburg, it was just like, it was a lot like going to a family reunion, only there was, like, nearly 3,000 people there, you know?
Okay. I got you.
Yeah, I would concur, because, again, this is my first time having gone to a black-centered or black-centric comic convention, and I had to hit myself twice because I used the term, this is just like the feeling I have at the real Comic-Con. And I said, oh, what do I mean real? What do I mean by real? I said that as a knee-jerk thing.
Yeah.
I said it twice. I said I had to hit myself because I am not immune to a conditioning as well. And you are conditioned to believe that San Diego or the New York Comic-Con, that's the real Comic-Con. But the reality is all of them are real.
Yep.
And this one, I was just so pleasantly surprised to see, as what Daryl was talking about, you had a great deal of cross-pollination there. You had women, you had a multi-ethnic representation. People just wanted to dig in to this pop culture. And this is what we do here at AfroNerd, which is so disturbing in some ways, is that, listen, if it's about revenue streams, if it's about making money ultimately, but it's also about content. There is just a lot of black pop cultural content that could be explored, and I would suspect that this is going to be a seed that will grow. We have connections. Our show has connections to the Afropunk people, at least now we do. Tangentially, we have connections with them. Friend of the show, Jocelyn Cooper. And if you know Afropunk's history, that started out as maybe a couple of hundred people in a basement in Brooklyn. 10 years later, 50 to 60,000 people showed up last summer. And it's by far the biggest, if not the second biggest music festival in New York. But it started out very small. So if you're going to go by the same analogy, last year the Schomburg was a moderate crowd. This crowd, I was sweating like a pig.
Yeah.
You know, I was wild. You know, I just didn't expect it to be this big. That, you know, panels, films, content, swag, as they say. I was very happy, pleasantly pleased, and I think that if you really get into it, there's even more. I mean, we saw, of course, you, Mr. Walker, there. We saw Brandon Easton from Watson and Holmes. Shout them out. We saw folks in costume. I mean, it's... But there's so many more people. Imagine if Reginald Hudlin was there. There's more people. Who's from the Boondocks? What's his name?
Aaron McGruder.
I know he's kind of a curmudgeon, but he needs to bring his behind the scenes. You know?
Yeah, no, there's, there was...
I'm sorry, go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, there. You know, we were talking afterwards, like, you know, where do you go from here? How do you grow something like that? I mean, the Schomburg itself is only so big, and I personally believe that the Schomburg has a lot to do with just the success of the event. It's that location being right there on 135th and you know, Malcolm X, and it was just a beautiful place. I mean, to be in Harlem, I honestly hadn't been in Harlem in years, you know, so just for me to be there was an energy, there was a vibe there that was feeling really good, and I would love to see it grow. But Daryl said, you know, I love the fact that there were so many young people there. I love the fact that there were teachers and there were librarians and there was families there. You know, I mean, there's a stereotype of there's so many stereotypes that revolve around us and who we are and how we interact with the world. And all of those were defied and broken in the course of a day, you know, and I knew that they were broken. I knew those stereotypes weren't true, but just to interact with young people and to see parents, you know, taking an active role in what, you know, what sort of popular culture their children are consuming, whether it was comics or animation or whatever, it was just a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, that was exemplified by the talk we had with Professor Jennings from Buffalo. And someone that I want to try to get on the show, and the Kraft family, which,
yeah,
that's great. You know, Jerry Kraft, he's already an established novelist himself, and he has his two boys create that book, The Offenders, which I read, and it's very good, you know, and he's growing the seed through them, and here are the kids, they're actually running the merchandise table talking to other kids. This is what we're doing. Yeah, yeah. And one of the kids in Rob Guillory fashion asked, you know, I never knew I could do this. And I was like, you see, Rob Guillory had it right there. So, like, these kids, if even 10 or 15% of them soaked in the fact that it is possible to do this, then this thing was a major success.
Yep, I agree. And I just got to give a shout-out to Jerry Kraft and his sons, Jalen and Aaron, because it was really Jerry who helped facilitate me coming out. You know, he actually put me up while I was back there, and him and I have been friends for a long time. And so it was, you know, not only did he help me just get my act together, but again, he put me up. And that takes a lot, you know, because I can snore really loud. I was down in the guest bedroom, but I'm sure I was in the way. So major props to Jerry. And, you know, he's not only does he have the book The Offenders out, but he's, you know, he does his comic strip, Mama's Boys, which is how I met him. And he just does a lot of really good positive stuff.
You know, and I'm thinking of something else, too. You know, I'm always about, you know, there's this belief that there really isn't a black pop culture scene, but if you go into the history of black pop culture, if you really started to enumerate just how big this thing could really be, it's, you know, the ties to the history of Harlem, that's a big thing, as you just said, Dave. You know, Schomburg, Arturo Schomburg, his museum, it's a big thing. That historical connection is just, it makes it that much more special. But if you were to actually enumerate just how many or how much of a black pop cultural imprint there really is, this thing could be far bigger than we could ever know.
Yeah.
You figure out someone like Dr. Cosby, who has a new show coming out. I think he's returning to television after a 20-year hiatus. And I recently just picked up his Fat Albert box set. He has early ties to childhood education and childhood animation. Just
yep.
him alone, as far as like a centerpiece, Magruder, Dr. Cosby, Michael Jai White has Black Dynamite, number one just came out. I mean, there's so many things that are coming out, past, present, and future, that thing could really be three or four times bigger than what we saw this past weekend, if you really get into it.
Yeah, and what I would love to see, too, is honestly to see this happen in other cities, you know, because there's so many other communities, Oakland, California, man. I mean, it would just be beautiful to have something like that there. And I know that, like, Philly has a show. They do a show in Philadelphia. I believe there's a show in Atlanta that are very, you know, for lack of a better term, we could call them Afrocentric shows. But, yeah, you really hit the nail on the head, because it's like, you know, there should be shows like this where Avery Brooks comes out, you know, and there's a, you know, there's an appearance by Avery Brooks. There's, you know, and what I was, one of the issues I was raising is that we need to start honoring a lot of the creators who, a lot of them aren't even really that active anymore, but in terms of comics, you know, there's guys like Ron Wilson, Keith Pollard, Trevor Von Eden, Paris Cullins. I mean, these are guys in the 70s and 80s that, like, I, you know, that I worship. You know, they had a profound impact on me. A lot of people, A, don't know who they are at this point, but also don't know that they were, you know, they were holding it down in the trenches, that they were black artists working at Marvel and DC. So I'd like to see, you know, that. I'd like to see us start embracing our history a little bit more and really putting that forth, because, you know, when I was a kid, I must have been in high school, I met Ron Wilson, and I didn't know Ron Wilson was a black guy. I just knew Ron Wilson drew mostly Marvel 2-in-1 with The Thing, and I met him at a convention, and it was like, oh, going back to what you said, I was one of those kids who was like, I can do this? You know, that helped open the door of my mind to the possibility of what I could do. So, yeah. Again, it's a beautiful thing.
Speaking about haven't heard in years, Trevor Von Eden, damn, that one left my memory banks a while ago. Which illustrates Mr. Walker's point perfectly, Ebert.
And also, Dave was referencing East Coast Black Age of Comics Convention. East Coast Black Age of Comics. But I'm also thinking of, what was it in my head? Something that I think that would be very, very important to this convention. Well, it's in my head and out of my head. I must be some ginseng. It'll come back to me. But it was something I thought that would be very special, you know, considering what you just said about franchising this thing out, so to speak. Daryl, who was the gentleman that writes for Chew at Image? Go ahead.
Well, Rob Guillory draws it. Who writes it?
Oh, John Layman. Guillory, right. John Layman is the one who writes it.
I'm sorry, but Guillory is the one that made the statement about going down south and having a workshop and discussing comic book creation to black kids, and their response was, we didn't know, it's something to the effect of, we can do this. We didn't know we could do this. Black people are into this. So they were shocked and became interested because they were presented the proposition. That's the whole. That's the chief component. No one thinks that, you know, we are about this, and I wish there was more media attention to the Schomburg. I think that within itself is kind of sort of growing. But when you think about, I'm just thinking about just how big this thing could be and should be. Kevin Gravel has a film coming out this weekend, Frankenstein. I mean, he should be. I mean, I've seen him. You can't miss the guy. He's huge. I've seen him at the New York Comic Con. Very successful guy. He should be at a place like this. I mean, if you really start to gather all that it could be. Pam Grier, we shouted out Pam Grier when she had a book and she contacted us. We had a mix-up with the timing. But Pam Grier is a iconic pop culture heroine.
Yeah.
So, and how, Lord knows how many fantasies I had about her when I was a kid. So anyway, I mean, you go into who could show up. Jim Brown could show up. He's still alive. Jim Brown could show up. I mean, this could be a big to-do. So I just hope that if we get a little bit more shrewd as the time goes on, and as much as I love the connection to the Schomburg, this thing, based on what it was last weekend, I don't know if the Schomburg is going to be big enough for that thing.
Yeah, that's a
consideration, too.
It's a consideration, and you know, my concern is always that, like, I'm curious how much of of it was the actual connection to the Schomburg that was responsible for the success of it and what would happen if you went someplace else. But at the same time, I don't think that there isn't any reason to not do other events throughout, you know, not just the city, but throughout the country, you know, throughout the United States and even beyond, you know, because that's the thing. We get lost in this what they call mainstream popular culture, but as a creator, as a writer, like, I'm writing stuff that's as mainstream as anything else, you know. But by virtue of the fact of how I look and what I'm writing about, it tends to get marginalized or put off in a corner as being, oh, well, this is, you know, he's an ethnic writer, or he's writing about, no, I'm just writing, like, my stuff could be read by anybody. I do believe that, and if it can't be, then that is my problem as a writer, because I am writing to anyone, you know, who wants to read it. Just like, you know, when Hollywood puts out a movie, you know, whether it's, you know, an Iron Man movie or you know, some big tentpole film, they're putting it out to everyone in the world. And it's interesting to me that the concept that if there's some piece of entertainment that's built around white characters and white stars, that's considered mainstream, but anything else is, like, off in the fringes, as if we don't belong to society as a whole. And then, you know, that's going to get me up on my soapbox, and I'll get really mad, and I'll go off, and I don't want to do that, so. But,
go ahead, Darryl.
Go ahead. Just to ease you down a little bit, my Super Justice Force is no longer with me. All right, it's been borrowed 3 days so far, all right, and it's already on loan and on loan and on loan. Every time I've gotten it back, it's been borrowed out. And it's with a quaint little white family at work. So you are already crossing over. It is already making sense. And the way I described it is, take Spider-Man, combine it with the Green Lantern mythos, but look at it from, like, a street kid from the inner city, that eyes. And, like, no, that's too many things. This can't work. And everybody that has grabbed it from me and read it and returned it to me is like, yo, Darryl, you're right. When is No Man's Land coming out? And I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to ask Mr. Walker that the next time he comes through. So, Mr. Walker, due to popular demand, when can we expect No Man's Land?
Well, I am working on No Man's Land as we speak, and it's I'm trying my hardest to get the first draft wrapped up. It'll be out this year. It won't be out realistically. It won't be out till the early fall. It might even be closer to the holidays, but it will be out this year for sure. So the goal is to get as many people reading Super Justice Force. Because as we're talking about it now, a lot of people are listening there going, what is No Man's Land, you know? The series is The Adventures of Darius Logan. Super Justice Force is the first book in what will be a trilogy. And No Man's Land is a place that's mentioned in the first book, but it's a huge part of the second story.
To tell you, like I said, you're looking for a crossover appeal. The Adventures of Darius Logan, folks, I can't recommend it enough. You know, we'll have Mr. Walker shout out his site. Pick up this book. If you are a superhero fan, and in the blog I mentioned that he absolutely Astro City'd me with this. Like, you can see the familiar tropes there, but the tweaks get you to come back. And that's, there wasn't enough time on that Saturday. I wanted to hit all the tables. I wanted to interview all the creators. There just simply wasn't enough time. So, folks, if you're complaining that there isn't enough comic stuff for us, go out and look, because it's out there. Afternerd?
You know, one other thing I wanted to mention as well, Dow, kind of just poking fun at you. There's an infamous commercial from years ago, a black commercial where someone tried to borrow something from someone else, and the tagline was, "Brother, you got to get your own." And I would have suggested that you tell your friend that by simply going to the DavidWalkerSite.com, say, "You got to get your own. the DavidWalkerSite.com or Amazon.com and actually purchase the Super Justice Force. And I love number 13. Number 13, the comic, is available as well. You got to get your own, brother. I'm just saying.
Now, can I just interject something? This is really nerdy right here. But that commercial, which was for the Hey Soul Classic Record Collection, was actually directed by Reginald Hudlin.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the first thing he ever directed out of school.
Wow. That's big.
Full circle.
Yep.
You know something? I have to put out some feelers to Reginald Hudlin because, first of all, I'm hearing, we're going to talk about this at some point during the show, that Quentin Tarantino's script, he let about five people have the script for Haters 8 is the Western that was supposed to be coming in after Django Unchained, and somehow that script was leaked, and knowing how Tarantino is, and I kind of agree, he said, you know what, I'm going to scrap this thing. I would prefer for him to work with Reginald, and who's
Black
the other
Panther.
Gentleman that yeah, well, who else am I talking about? Black Panther, for him, those two to get together, Christopher Priest as well, have those three masterminds work on a Black Panther for Marvel, because I know Marvel is hesitant to pull the trigger on this thing, but I'm sure that if they can make $500 million for slavery as pop culture, they can certainly make a black pop culture hero make even a billion.
If Quentin wanted to do it,
I'm pretty sure they could do it.
They'll probably pull the trigger.
Say it again?
They'll pull the trigger. If Quentin Tarantino wanted to do it, they probably would pull the trigger. They'll pull the trigger.
Well, Quentin in print has said that, you know, he's kind of sort of if the comic book movies, although he is a comic book head, and he said that at one point in the early 90s, he was slated to direct a Luke Cage film with Larry Fishburne as a titular character. You know, that who knows how that would have turned out? It sounds good, but he did have that, you know, that fire in the belly for doing superhero stuff. I just think that, I mean, listen, they could even take some parts of the cartoon that we actually saw at the Schomburg. The part where you see the predecessor to the Black Panther, one of Black Panther's antecedents, they could have some of the same guys from Django just for S and giggles to appear in that scene. I already know how this is. They need me on the show. Bottom line. I will be a consultant. I'm just saying. I already can picture how this thing could be. And even in the upcoming Winter Soldier, they should have a flashback of the same thing where he gets his ass kicked by T'Chaka. they need to put that in there. That I teach you a lesson. I will teach you a lesson. That
we just got him banned. He wants to get us banned. Oh God.
I'm just saying. Let's switch things around a little bit, folks. Again, go to the DavidWalkerSite.com. Go to Amazon.com. Pick up some appropriate swag, courtesy of Mr. David Walker. Please do that. And also, we'll just keep on shouting out the Schomburg Black Comic Con. And, heck, we got to show some love for the East Coast Black Age also. That's been going on for a number of years. I've never been compelled to go. Now I have to go. I got to figure out something. I got to see what that's about. So got to get these things going. But I want to kind of transfer some things around a little bit. Dave, can you hold on for a minute? Do you mind?
Yeah.
I know you said your time is kind of...
Nope, I'm good. I'm good.
Good. Let's transition to another topic, and then after this, we'll go to a musical break. Let's bounce around a little bit. With Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm hearing that J. August Richards, he's in and out of this thing. I don't know why they just make him a regular character. They need some more folks of color in that thing besides the lovely Ming-Na, I think. Anyway,
ding ding ding.
Now they're saying that he's going to end up being Deathlok. Daryl, what's up with that?
Well, as a result of the explosion, and if you guys haven't been paying attention, there was a huge explosion. He ended up losing a leg, having the same eye kind of thing, the bionic eye that the black female agent had in the previous show, which it comes to another trope, like, hey, Marvel series, how many black people end up being robotic? But I digress. And so, to me, the Deathlock thing, it's natural if you go back and see his bodily condition after the whole explosion thing. Because remember, Deathlock was technically dead and reanimated. Thank you, Mr. McDuffie, for the update, because now everybody's using that. He didn't actually die, but you could see where they're going to graft bionic parts onto him, and either he's going to be Deathlock or he's going to be the $6 million man. Either way, nowadays $6 billion man with all of these things they're doing. But it comes back to something you said. There's too few. We don't have a normal black person on this show. All the ethnic people in this show and Coulson are damaged in some way. So I'm just like, okay, there's no normal. All right, but yet we can't have consistent superpowers on this show. How does that work, Captain?
Listen, you do not, when it comes to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., to pass it to me. Let's pass it back to Africa. You know what I'm going to do. So just leave me alone on this one. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, I know. I had a suspicion he was going to do that. I'm sticking with it. People know I'm addicted to pop culture, comic book stuff, so even if it's bad, I will remain. I stuck with the entirety of Smallville for 10 years. If that tells you anything. I should have opted out of Smallville after season 3, and I didn't know any better. So I'll stick just so I can see it. You know, that's just me. I'm more of a Blacklist fan than a S.H.I.E.L.D. fan. I wish the S.H.I.E.L.D. was more like the Blacklist in some way. I'm a little disturbed that we're not really seeing an entirety of our spectrum. You know, where are the black folk? Where are the Latin folk? We have two Asian characters on there, Ming-Na, and the computer expert is part Asian. So, I mean, you know, it's just something. Joss Whedon really is really better than that. Maybe it's a Disney thing. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this, Dave, on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Sif is supposed to be making an appearance. I mean, maybe they'll start to capitalize on getting some more Marvel characters on there. I don't know. I don't know where they're going to go with this thing.
Well, you know, to be honest, I have not watched a single episode yet. Just because I've been so busy and it's just I have not heard enough positive things. Everybody I talk to says, I want to like it. I keep trying to like it, and I'm like, my days of going with something just because I want to like it, those are over. I'm too old.
There you go.
You know.
There you go.
So, Deathlock. I mean, I love that character, the original Deathlock, Luther Manning from the 1970s. I believe it was Astonishing Tales that was the comic that he appeared in. And you can't do that character on TV. I mean, that would look ridiculous. And so I am concerned that it's just going to be a $6 million or a $6 billion man sort of ripoff, whereas, you know, Deathlock was – RoboCop was Deathlock. That's what – where RoboCop came from. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. So I may check it out just for that, just to see, but I'm not in any hurry. You know, it's I'll wait till it's all on Netflix or something like that, and then watch power through it like in a weekend and then really regret it, feel like I binged on something. So.
like the Beverly Hills Cop pilot, regret it that
way.
Oh,
you had to bring that one up, you know.
I told you I'll have revenge on you. I might as well stick. You stuck me with Kid Spectacular. I'm sticking you back with that pilot.
Yeah, no, the Beverly Hills Cop pilot is it sort of burned into my brain as just as an awful experience. But that's the thing, I just don't want to be that disappointed with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, I'm still upset that that Agent Coulson is on the show. I haven't even watched it. I don't know how they explain it, but I'm mad about it. So
there's a rather lengthy explanation. That's actually the last couple of episodes. Within the last few weeks, they've actually delved into why he survived, and I think as of late, they're going to get into what made him so special. Now they're using the term that he's special. We don't know how he's special, but they're going somewhere with it. Just also for the audience, when you mentioned Astonishing Tales, that's Astonishing Tales number 25, Deathlock the Demolisher, and I'm wondering, how much of an influence did Deathlock have on Cyborg, DC Cyborg, because it predates Cyborg from about 6 years? I'm wondering about that. So maybe Daryl's onto something. Usually with Black Folk, either we're electric, we have electric powers, we're very fast, or now we're cyborgs. I'm just curious.
I think this goes back to the Captain thing about the black male image or the black female image, how we got to be defective in some way, you know, or you can't have just a strong black person on screen being a strong black person. It has to be, there always must be a catch, a.k.a. Misty Knight, Bionic Arm, a.k.a.
Yeah, another one. Yeah, see, you brought one out there.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, it's cool. It's kind of cool, but it gets to be a meme at some point, doesn't it?
Well, hey, we're going to see J. August Richards as a Deathlock Luke Cage combo. So get ready to add to the meme.
All right, listen, gentlemen, let's go to a quick you want to say something, Dave?
I was just going to say, I had never thought about it, like how we're all either bionic or electric. I thought about the electric thing before, and now it's really got me upset. So,
see, things you only hear on this show, because combined we are that geeky. We just all come at it from different angles. Deeper comes from the rational side. Captain comes from the business side, and me, I'm the out of control geek. We meet in the middle, and strange things happen on Afro Nerd, folks. That's why you can't miss the comic shop every week. Afro Nerd.
It's a good way to break
all
it
right,
down.
All right, let's go to a quick black rock psychedelic soul urban alternative groove, and also keeping with a geek theme, I should say. This is Zimzala Bim, Mos Def. We'll be right back, folks, in the game. Let's groove.
Yes, 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 yes. Ha! Ghetto people. This was for you. You and you and you and you and you in the front. Yo! That Johnson. Loud and stomping, undisputed heavyweight champ of the world. Yo, I'm loud with it, low middle to high with it, and that's how I'ma live and die with it. All up and down your spine with it, like Zimzala Bim, Jack Johnson. Yes, my dog ride with them. The most special, most ghetto, most mental, most valuable. Rep my avenue like it's the damn state capital. Come and travel through minds of better mark of greatness. Some slaves who hijack the spaceship. The hackers who can crack the matrix and build a road back to basics and get y'all all off that strange shit that all these other cats run game with. It's tainted. Consider this the moment to change it. Now, Jack Johnson, sandstorm, never bow down. Back off or get clapped on right about. Wow. From east to the west, up north to down south, we show you how to really make a march that bounce.
show you how to really make the ghetto wild out. First letters that I wrote when I sketched the script down, I'm loud with it, low middle to high with it. And that's how I'm a living down with it. I shine with it, prime with it, revered and recognized with it. The ghetto know what time is it, when I spit it, menage in it, I iron lion stride with it. These doctors no string or not, I make them proud with it.
And look alive, the ghetto rock with it. Look alive, ghetto rock with it.
Phaser, excuse the expletives. You know, we do try to run a fairly clean ship here. That was the mighty Mos Def, who I think goes by the moniker Yasiin Bey. And for those who are familiar with Johnny Quest, his friend Haji would always exclaim, Zim Zalabim. So that's the title of that song from the New Danger CD. So definitely pick it up. Classic album. And he was featured with a black rock band, Black Jack Johnson, which I assume is referencing the boxer. So there's an educational thing, educational symbiosis when you deal with the Afro nerd. Zim Zalabim. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have friend of the show, comic book creator, writer of Super Justice Force, Mr. David Walker. And, of course, we have our own Enterprise crew, the mighty James Tiberius Kirk, and, of course, the uncanny Daryl B. Gentlemen, I want to go to the next thing, and actually, before we talk about the debacle that is Bats versus Supes, before we get into that, which has been extended to 2016, I don't even care about it anymore because I was hyped up, but you went another year, another 10 months. Now I don't care until it's ready to come back out. Anyway, I must confess that DC did get something right for a change. Justice League War, which I believe is coming out the 4th of next month, we were able to get a preview on this thing. I think it was actually shown in Manhattan a few days ago. Daryl, what are your thoughts about this thing? I mean, this was based on the DC 52 new mythology, and it was pretty accurate to me. Just a few changes. Yeah, but I have to admit, I was thoroughly entertained. Your thoughts? What say you?
I have to say, I feel about the way I feel about the Flashpoint Paradox, okay? In comic book form, reading it, I was like, this is a joke. This, you know, this is like looking at from what my previous experience with the characters, I was like, oh, my God, what are they doing here? What they, reading it, watching it. The way it is ultra faithful to the written thing. The only change is the Shazam, which, you know, that's my other problem with it, but I'll get into that in a second, is the Shazam part. And the Wonder Woman cuts up a lot of parademons. And I'll say it like this. I'm used to heroes trying to save people, and they did save a lot of people, but boy, even after they find out how parademons are made, they still are Superman cutting through guys, Batman blowing up parademons, Wonder Woman cutting through guys. I was like, wow, you know what the parademons are, right? You know what, that's a personal bias. I just got to get used to the new direction of these heroes. I'm used to them not killing. You know, I'm used to them only killing in in extreme circumstances. They were taking kind of a joy here in killing, even though it's to save the planet. It's like I said, a personal bias of mine. You know, I'm used to them finding ways not to kill. But they're here, it seemed to me they were killing with impunity. Now my other real problem with it, Shazam, Billy Batson. Can you make this kid any more unlikable compared to what he was before? I know this is Jeff Johns' vision, all right? But I'm used to a positive kid getting these powers because he's so positive in the face of adversity. You essentially gave me, and this Billy Batson, a young Green Lantern, a young Hal Jordan, because this kid's a jerk. And how many times could he say the word Shazam and not change? Hello, DC, when he says the word, the lightning bolt hits. That's how Shazam is supposed to work. And I hate using Shazam. It's Captain Marvel, for God's sake. Anyway, like I said, personal biases. But, Cap, you want it?
Yes, sir. Okay. Now, you don't know how many different type of, you know, videos or movies, cartoons, I have to, taking Mr. Walker's terminology, power through most of the time, you know? But this was actually a treat. So it was, I just thought it was done very well. And I wish they could do movies at this level. But I did have a problem with Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Shazam, just as Daryl B. said. I noticed the same thing. And I thought he was slightly powered down to a certain extent. I know they have this thing over there, Superman has to be the top dog and everything else. But if we really know, if they really, if it was done correctly, how that was supposed to go, because if they really, really had a true fight, because Shazam is magical. What is Superman's weakness? That's a whole other thing, though. Back to the cartoon. I think the cartoon was done very well. I enjoyed it. I won't berate it too much, except the problems with Captain Marvel. I did love Wonder Woman. I love that dark side. I'm just a dark guy. So, you know, I would love to see more things done like this, and I would love to see the movie world done half as good as this, other than Batman. Batman, they nail. Forget about Batman. You know,
it's amazing how they consistently get Wonder Woman right in these animated joints, but they can't get it together for the screen.
back over to you, Sir Raffle Dirt.
Yes. Mr. Walker, did you get a chance to check this out?
I have not seen it yet, nope. And I was so, honestly, after the New 52 debacle is the best way to describe it, you know, I bought maybe 10 or 15 of the first issues of the New 52 and was so disappointed in all of them, even though some there was a couple good ones in there. Animal Man was good and Scott Snyder's Batman was good. But, I honestly have not bought a DC comic since then. I was that disgusted by it. And then on top of that, I started, you know, I was actually paying attention to a lot of the creative problems that some of the creators were having with the editorial department, and that just turned me off even more. So it's very difficult for me to get excited about anything DC at this point in the game. You know, so I was seeing that this animated movie is coming out, and I was like, oh, there's a time in my life where I would have been excited, but now I'm like, who cares?
Oh, it's sort of like the Scarlet Letter. You know,
yeah.
It tainted everything it touched.
Yeah.
I get you.
We have a call. Let's get to the calls. Okay, 703, welcome to the Grindhouse. This is the comic shop / Afro Nerd, or vice versa. 703?
Hey, good evening, everybody. This is Bice for the live call from D.C.
All right.
How you doing,
what's up, man?
I'm good. And first, I want to commend Mr. Walker. I came in a little late, but I've been following your work. You did 13, correct?
Yes, that's me.
Okay, I got all of that. So, and I, you know, if I'm rehashing anything, forgive me. So, I think I was following you. I think you was kind of making some moves for that to get some sort of animated treatment. If you went over that, I apologize. But if not, I'd like to know how far along that's come.
Well, we actually have been trying to get a live action deal going, and it's still in play. Nothing definite has happened. There's some meetings that are supposed to happen next week in L.A., actually. So my goal is to get a TV show. I would rather have a TV show than a movie, because there's just a little bit more room to play around with. So it's still, you know, I was talking to the L.A. guys a couple of days ago, and they told me, they were like, it's looking good, but I don't believe anything looks good until the check is cleared, you know. So, but you know, it's been real positive. A lot of good feedback. But as with everything, it's almost like when you're dating. You know, you know what's that saying? You got to kiss a lot of frogs or whatever. We're just kissing a lot of frogs these days. That's what it comes down to.
Well, I want to tell you, Your comics, it was a breath of fresh air. It's just something you just don't see. I know you have a lot of war stories to discuss, but let's let you know you have fans out here. If you ever go the Kickstarter route, I'll be the first ones to donate. So,
well, I appreciate that. And Robert, the artist, I know I'll be talking to him later today, because we have a project that we're developing right now that I think, you know, really what we're trying to do is just. We know that there's a large reader base out there that's not – they're enjoying what they're getting, but there's more. There's always room to give people more, and that's what Robert and I really want to do. So.
Can I ask you one question,
something,
I'll hang
up. Okay, bye. Go ahead.
So I just had a quick question. I've always been intrigued about artists and pay. And, you know, if you can answer this, how much does an artist, you think, make for D.C.? And how much does an artist make for, you know, independent? If you were, let's say you signed for Dark Horse, you were signed as an artist. How is it per book, or do they get annual salaries? Is it contracted out? You know, what is that, you know, dollar-wise?
It depends on the publisher. And you know, so Marvel and DC pay a page rate. So you get – the artist gets a set amount per page, and then they usually get a royalty based on trade paperback sales. But then you get some of this independent stuff, and it's like they're either getting paid very little or nothing at all. A lot of times it's all a back-end deal. It's based on percentage of sales. That's like how Image books work. Image is all the money people make is after the fact. They don't make any money up front. So it's not a good way to get rich, most definitely. You're better off getting a job like as a bus driver or cleaning septic tanks or something. So,
wow.
But it's a lot of the smaller independent publishers don't pay anything up front.
But if you are a very popular artist and your book sells, let's say, 50,000 for that month, that's got to be somewhat lucrative, I would think.
If you've got a good deal, whether it's if you do a book at Image, and your book is selling, you know, 10, 20, 30, up to 50,000 per unit, then yeah, you're making some good money. Or you're going to be making decent money. You're especially making good money off the trade paperbacks, because that's where the real money comes from. And then if you're at Marvel or DC, if you've got a good deal in terms of getting royalties, there's definitely money to be made on the back end. But a lot of comic artists, like right here in town right now, is the Wizard World show is going on this weekend, and a lot of artists are in town, and you see them doing commissions and selling prints. And it's like, and that's where a lot of their bread and butter comes from, you know. If I stopped and did the math once with a friend of mine who was at the time had been doing some work for Marvel, and he was very open with me about how much he was making, and he was doing a monthly book at Marvel, and at the end of the day, he was making about $24,000 a year, which isn't, you know, it's not terrible money, but if you're living in New York City, you can't live off of $24,000 a year. You know,
that's for sure.
and so, you know, a lot of these guys make their money by, you know, turning around and selling the original pages, or doing commissions, or selling prints and that sort of stuff too. So, you know, and I'm just I'm only a writer, so I can't even sell. There's no resale value to, you know, the crumbled up pieces of paper I throw in the trash, but. you know, it's a struggle. It's definitely a hustle. And a lot of, especially with a lot of the independent people are hoping for some sort of deal, whether they get the Robert Kirkman Walking Dead deal, you know, which everybody wants. But that's like lightning in a bottle right there.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, you know, you do have some of these superstars that they, you know, they hit the mother in some way. Another way, they get the big name recognition. They get it, they get these deals on television. They get a deal in a movie. Your book is like stupendously popular. So it doesn't happen for everyone, but there is, I guess, there's a holy grail for someone who's a writer or who is an artist if that book becomes a popular book or just takes off. So I guess, is that something that's kind of holding? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, the thing is, though, you got to own it. You know, it's like if you don't own it, you can be writing, you know, you could be writing X-Men or Superman, and it could be number one in the sales, and, you know, either Warner Brothers or Disney is making a lot of money off of those units of X-Men or Superman or whatever it is. But if you're the writer or the artist, you're just making what you're making, and you don't get a percentage of the movies or anything like that. And so and that's what pop culture in Hollywood really seems to be gravitating towards. There is some other independent stuff, you know, The Walking Dead being an example. Chew may get its opportunity at some point. You know, that's an Image book. And there's a few others here and there. But that's it. If you don't own it, there's only so much money you'll be making. So as a somebody said it best the other day, you know, if you're doing creator-owned comics, it's what you're doing is you're making a long-term investment. You're making the investment in trade paperback sales primarily, and hopefully option money, and then maybe even production deal money, because there's differences between those too as well, you know. So there's days where I feel like I did not make the best decision from a financial standpoint in terms of careers. But, you know, at the same time, I'm really happy with what I do, and I like telling stories and entertaining people. So, you know, if someday I make a good chunk of money, that's fine. But, you know, like I'm looking for a regular day job again right now. I'm back in the trenches of that. Just like, oh, maybe I get a job, you know, at Target or something like that. So,
well,
not
security.
Not that bad.
I'll say this much, and this is what we're trying to do. It is for the long haul. And for everyone here, it's for the long haul because we sincerely like doing what we're doing. I think what's really important, based on what we experienced last week, is that especially for minority artists, we've got to really start to develop an infrastructure. Once you get an infrastructure, then we can start. You got to start to create an industry that can sustain you. And that's what seems to be very difficult. But I think we are pointing in that direction. It just takes some time, you know. It's a long race. It's the long haul. So I think you will be more successful as time goes on because everything seems to be geared towards content. The minstrels, I say, you know, I always use the term minstrel to be half funny, but the minstrels have content and they make a lot of money. World Star Hip Hop. God bless Q, the gentleman who goes by the name Q, who's a Queens guy. He came up with this idea of putting grotesque videos on a website. Now, you know, I hate to admit it, but WorldStar is an institution. And he makes several million a year from just posts, or maybe even more than that. But he has created an institution centered around minstrel behavior, showing black folk and brown folk in the worst light. But my thinking is, hell, you factor in your intellectual properties, what we bring to the table, Afro punk, all this stuff that's alternative, that's the flip side, that's the bizarro to his Superman.
Yeah.
We just got to wait it out. We got to wait out the minstrel stuff, I think. Darryl, any thoughts on this?
It's a simple fact of the matter that if you're going to get into this line of work, there's one word that you need to learn, and it has bad connotations associated to it, but it fits here. You have to hustle, hustle, hustle. You have to work your promotion game. You have to get your name out there. You have to do your pitch. You have to keep on working. You have to keep on being out there. You have to keep on being relevant. Nothing in the comics business happens by you sitting back and, well, you know, Rob Liefeld. Anyway, nothing in the comic business happens by you sitting back after doing one or two good things and, oh, I'm going to just keep on being rich. You know,
yeah.
Robert Kirkman is a perfect example. People point to his Walking Dead all the time that I thought Invincible was a better series. But he kept hustling. He was doing both books. And then here comes the picture deal for Walking Dead. And Kirkman still was working both books. And then it got cemented. So then he was like, you know what? I could put Invincible in the hands of other people. I'll focus on Walking Dead now. I'm still getting royalties off of Invincible. But you know what? But he kept hustling. And even that interview he did where he essentially told Marvel and DC to step his game up, that was a hustle right there. That was a hustle. He put his name out there. I'm attaching my name to it. You guys got to work harder. You guys got to build a better business model. Yes, Robert Kirkman said it. Here, you could quote me on that. That was getting his name out. He was still hustling. His name remains relevant. So folks up there that want to get into the business, folks wanting to be relevant in the business, hustle, hustle, hustle. Afro Nerd, back to you.
You know, one quick thing that might give you a moment of hope or a point of hope is Brickleberry. Now, I kind of like Brickleberry. It's a Comedy Central cartoon. I think it just closed its second season. Very crass humor. Roger Black, a.k.a. Yucko the Clown. Yucko the Clown was a Howard Stern Whack Packer. Somehow, through perseverance, he got a deal with Comedy Central. Now he has a very popular cartoon entitled Brickleberry. So if Yucko the Clown could get a deal and meet out some kind of success, I'm sure that all the folks conversing right now could do the same thing. Yucko the Clown has a deal. I got to put it that way. So there's got to be some hope. There's got to be some hope, gentlemen. That's all I have to say. Let's turn things around quickly. I'm hearing, Daryl, that Wally West may get a tan courtesy of the Flash TV series on the WB. Do you think this is possible? And also, Iris West may get a tan. What's up with that?
Well, if you saw the news report that came on Comic Book Resources and Comics Alliance, they're getting Jesse, I forgot his last name, who was on Law and Order, the black, he's going to play he's going to play Detective West. So once I saw the name, I'm like, oh, shoot, Wally's going to be black. That was the first thought that came to mind. But then I got to remember, this is the age of mixed-race marriages. So we don't know what Wally is until we actually see Wally. But I think it was kind of cool. And as usual, the comments of the, oh, no, you can't do this. This is an affront to our sensibilities. Oh God, what is they doing? Calm down. We don't know what the deal is. It's the same sort of reaction what has put DC and Warner Brothers in the Batman-Superman hole. You overreact to every rumor, and what did I say? I said, I believe it when I'm sitting in the theater, the opening titles come up, I have my large drink and popcorn in my hand, and it's about to come out. Outside of that, all of you rumor mongers out there, all of you closet racists, all of you end-of-the-world types involving this movie and all their properties, sit on it and spin. Wait. Cap?
Well, I definitely agree with you, and kudos to you with the Batman versus Superman movie. All right? I give you your propers for that, sir. But when it comes to far as Wally West, we just have to wait and see. I totally agree with you. Let's see what happens. You know? Let's just see what happens. It's worth talking about. That's what we're doing now. But we have learned through experience not to get too excited with these individuals. So that's the game that they play. Get you going, get you going, get you going, and then, boom, when it's time for you to sit down, they pull away the chair, and you just hit the ground. That's the game that they play. So we just have to wait and see. Back over to you, Seraph.
Wait, but Cap, I love how they did this, though, okay? This is pure evil genius, okay? You let us go on for 2 weeks talking about Denzel as Green Lantern or Lex Luthor. Oh, Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. Oh, it could be a Latin Flash. Oh, and by the way, we're moving the movie back to 2016. Anyway, hey, did you hear that Ben Affleck met a book? Wait, what was that? The movie's going back to when? Hold on. And Marvel, give Marvel credit. Hey, you guys don't have that slot anymore? Yo, Edgar Wright, you know, we're going to move Ant-Man up to their slot. Take that, Warner Brothers.
But here's the thing. You actually knew that was actually going to happen. We said right here on the show, it takes a year to do special effects. So how are they going to put the movie together that fast? You understand? It just wasn't going to happen in that time frame unless they were going to give you some utter garbage, and they better not do that. So it just only made sense for them to do what they were about to do. It didn't make any sense. You just can't throw it together like that. The stakes are high. We're not in 1998 anymore. This is 2014. You have to come correct with these superhero movies. We do not want another Green Lantern, okay? Back over to Sir Raffle Dirt.
You know something that really made me even more concerned about this, and it was really from the Justice League War DVD. As much as I enjoyed it, and I'm thinking in my head, because it was so cinematic to look at, even though it's a cartoon, I could envision it being live action based on the quality of the product. But in the back of my head, I said, wait a minute. This Justice League movie is the Avengers. It is the Avengers. The Avengers live action was a invasion movie. So I said, if they try to do some kind of Justice League movie and it looks anything like Justice League War, it's literally going to be the Avengers. And that might be what it's doomed. Now, that's the one thing I'm – because in order for – these heroes are so powerful and so iconic, what reason would they have to get together but for there to be some kind of world event? And what better world event would it be if it was going to be some kind of invasion? If they do an invasion thing for a JLA movie, I think it's going to suck by default because of Avengers already having done it. What's the likelihood of that happening?
Well, Alfred, you got to remember, Justice League started out as an invasion movie. Justice League animated started out as an invasion movie. When they with the Martians, or the pseudo Martians, all right? When they transferred to Justice League Unlimited. How did they do that? Star-crossed with the invasion of the Thanagarians. So it's a common trope. You know, how are we going to get them together? We're going to do an invasion worldwide. Sure enough, you know, so we can't say Avengers started it because it's been doing this a long time.
Well, listen, the problem, though, it's one thing to look at it from a comic book perspective or an animated effort. But when you're talking about billion-dollar franchises, I don't think an audience is going to go for that because the audience is – you're talking about a larger venue trying to go into that trope as opposed to a smaller one. Comic book nerds could accept these tropes, these memes. I don't know if an audience that gave $1 billion to Marvel are going to be willing to give $1 billion to JLA for the same movie.
Here's the thing. When we first talked about the JLA movie, way back, way back, before it was even ready to be conceived. I got to give props to the great Darryl B. again. When we were talking about the different ways how we could bring these superheroes together, Darryl had said, some outside threat. That's what you said, Darryl. That's what you said.
Yeah.
I remember. So kudos to you again. And this allows these superheroes to put aside all their egos, their grievances, and everything else, and come together and defend the Earth. So here we go back with the same trope. It is what it is, you know? It is what it is.
And yet Batman remains Batman.
That's right.
All right, gentlemen, you know, this is the Grindhouse mashup, so we're going to have to mix in a couple of political and pop culture stories. But, you know, before we get to Sherman, I got to talk about this cornerback. Before we get to that, because I'm not even a sports guy, before we go there, I want to talk about one comic book thing, and then we'll leave that alone. The last issue of FF opened up a whole bag of worms, Darryl. I know Dave read this issue. I actually dig FF. I kind of like, I even like the art, even though some folks don't really like the art. I think that artist is from, what did he do, Mutant X or something? What was that
no,
comic?
No, he did
Ecstatics,
the Aldred.
Yeah,
Ecstatics, Ecstatics.
Right. And he also did another book that I liked. It was a book about a zombie, I think it's a zombie, iZombie, same artist. He opened up a door as into a power set issue. He did something with Ant-Man that it's kind of it's causing a little bit of a stir on the internet, slightly, because it's making the whole Pym particle thing, and he made a whole thing that he connected. It's kind of ingenious. He connected Ant-Man and Giant Man, the Vision, Wonder Man. All of them are interconnected, obviously, in Avengers and Hank Pym mythology. And he talked about how their power sets work. Did you pick that up, Darryl, what he was doing? Because he made it this time where a normal-sized Ant-Man can have the strength of a Giant Man based on Pym particle. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah, and again, this goes to show, and Captain will know, and Mr. Walker will probably know where I'm going with this. This just goes to show these folks that are raising an uproar about this never read the Busick run of Avengers, never read Thunderbolts in their life, and concerning Goliath, concerning Wonder Man, and Pym Particle. Never read it before. Just... it is connected with ionic energy, okay? They established that way back then. And in the book, Goliath asked him about, I want to say the Nefaria protocols, where they found out that the two energies could be simpatico. And Goliath asked him straight out, way back when, we're going 15, 16, 17 years, like, what effect would this have on a regular human? And Pym goes, you know what? I suppose, given time and your body's getting used to the Pym particles or the ionic energy, you could become stronger and it could become proportional to an ant or proportional in terms of size ratio. I give kudos to Fraction, Kessel, and Allred for digging out this nugget and using this. Because once I read the issue, I've read this before. I went back, and I went through several Avengers books before I found the conversation. It is in the Faria Protocols, folks. And people going crazy, oh, you can't do that. It's changing the character. Go back and read. There's always been a connection, and this was one of the side effects that was alluded to way back when. But you know what it is? Geek rage. It doesn't make sense to me. It must be wrong. Like, guys, chill. They did have a basis for it. Rand knows I haven't agreed with everything Matt Fraction has done, but here I got to give him a thumbs up for this. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool because it kind of, again, it goes into the interconnectedness of these characters. I mean, it was ingenious with him to make a correlation between size and durability and power. I mean, it deals with the change. Listen, Hank Pym created Ultron, and Ultron created the Vision. They're all interconnected, and the fact that their power set deals with power, you know, a decrease and increase of something. We know that the Vision increases or decreases density, the way that Ant-Man and Giant Man decrease and increase size. So, I mean, the way they put it together, I just thought it was fascinating. I mean, it's all pseudoscience, obviously, but it's just funny how Marvel's able to do it, and to me, it worked. Where they go with this,
we don't know. And yet, Black Goliath still died first in Civil War, so, you know, and he had Pym particles. So I'll leave it there alone. Let's go on. Let's move. There comes that geek rage thing. Anyway.
All right. Enough with the, you know, people are probably listening. What the hell are these people talking about? All right. Let's move things along. We're gonna go to more of a more serious fair. We gotta talk about this gentleman, Richard Sherman. Let me play a clip so the audience. I'm pretty sure the clip has been heard around the world. I think actually 51 million people saw this thing. So he actually increased the audience based on this dust up, and we can't stop talking about it. So anyway, this is Seattle Seahawk. Richard Sherman, the cornerback, perhaps now they're saying he's perhaps the best cornerback in the league. This is the dust up. Hold on.
All right, Richard, let me ask you the final play. Take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who is talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm going to set it for you real quick.
All right, the great George Peppard. Was it George Peppard who was in the A-Team?
Yeah, that's him.
Who was it? I love it when a plan comes together. I pity the fool. That's who Sherman reminded me of, I must say. I'm just saying. Captain, you and Daryl are really into sports. I am the quintessential nerd, but I know a little something. What is this? What is this? Explain this to me.
Well, I have an entirely different take on the situation. And for those people who never really played sports at a high end, tournaments and things like that, they may not be able to quite understand what's going on here. All right? But before I even get into that, I have to give you a little backdrop, right? Since the inception of the black man in this country, the powers that be have not really been comfortable with thee. How so, Captain? Real simple. When slavery was over, what was supposed to happen, the black people here should have been taken back to Africa. That did not take place. What they did, they said to you, more or less, have you ever been to someone's house? And when you get to their house, they tell you, make yourself at home. You are a guest in the house. You do know that as a guest in the house, even though they said to you, make yourself at home, you can only raise your voice but so high. You may be able to go into the refrigerator, but you cannot touch everything in the refrigerator. The owner of the house can turn over tables, can raise their voice. Now, if you decide to do as the owner does, the owner may wrestle you to the ground. The owner may call the police. Now, America has been settled by white people, actually for white people. What happened to the Indian? Oh, didn't they slaughter them? There's a few of them left on the reservation, but for the most part, you really don't see Indians, so to speak. So now, in a testosterone-charged sport, we have this young man here who went to Stanford, by the way, one of the most prestigious schools in the world. But let me give you a little bit more backdrop to explain a little bit further. The great Larry Bird had choked Dr. J. We know who Larry Bird is, the great basketball player. No one called him a thug. Maybe an a-hole, but not a thug. Ben Roethlisberger, this is the quarterback, the all-star quarterback for Pittsburgh Steelers. A lot of off-field shenanigans, smacking women on their booties in clubs. We know thugs do that. Come on, thugs, if you're listening. Probably not too many thugs listening to this show. That's thug behavior. No one called him a thug. Clay Matthews, the linebacker, the all-star linebacker for Green Bay Packers, known to have some off-field shenanigans that is thug-like, calling people out off-field now, not during the game, calling people out and say, let's fight. There was a MMA, former MMA fighter, I think it's Rasputin. He had called him out one time in a bar, and then the people told him, you were about to get your ass kicked. Cut it out. No one called Clay Matthews a thug. You see a pattern developing here? These are white guys. Let me go further. Hockey players, the epitome of thugs. Hockey players, not only do they allow hockey players to fight, hockey players run up in the stands and punch people in their face. You understand? This has happened. Fines and everything else, lawsuits and everything else. No one calls the hockey players. That's thug behavior now. You pay your $150 to come to a hockey game, you get punched in the face by a player. No one calls them a thug. They call them maybe an a-hole. You see a pattern developing here? White guy. Now, we know when you're playing defensive back. If you remember Revis, Revis was the guy that played for the New York Jets, defensive back. They called it Revis Island. Because when you play defensive back, it's you against the world. There's a tendency for you to be a bit arrogant when you play that position. Testosterone-charged sport. It's not chess competition. This is not working on Wall Street. You have to be a testosterone-charged person in order to play football. If you're a regular guy, go work a job. It's not for you. The great Deion Sanders, they used to call him arrogant because he used to make these rap records. Must be the money that's turning them on. Remember them stupid records? Great player. Mel Blunt, five-time Pro Bowler, played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Hall of Fame inductee. Arrogant. Issues. Now, this is just to set the backdrop so you can understand. You have a 25-year-old playing in the biggest game of his life in a testosterone-charged sport. You stick the microphone in his face a few seconds after he gets off the field in the biggest game in his life. And that's all he says. He raised his voice. He didn't curse. He didn't push the lady. Everybody in America became uncomfortable because the black man was not in his ultra conservative position. Notice I didn't say conservative. I said ultra. The whole world had a problem, berated him, called him a thug. I didn't know thugs were able to go to Stanford. I didn't know that. You understand? Yes, he's from the way of Compton. But what did he really do at the end of the day? One of the best players in the position right now in the NFL, He's only making, I believe, $465,000 a year right now. That's great job money, but that's not NFL money. His contract is going to be coming up soon. They're going to have to pay this man about $35 million a year for a five-year contract. That's NFL money. What did he really do? Now, if you watch, the NFL figured it out. They eventually fined him, but they did not fine him for what he did off-field. They fined him for what he did on-field with the choking and everything for taunting. All this energy was directed towards him, so they went back and looked at the tape and said, let's try to find something. And then also, because they realized, the media realized, he's not a thug after the fact, because people were starting to talk about the hockey players, the Larry Birds, all of these white guys, and they said, wait a minute, this guy went to one of the most prestigious schools in the world. They don't let thugs in there. Listen to the way he speaks when he's on interviews and everything else. This was a case of a young man playing a testosterone-charged sport at 25, and they stuck the mic in his face really quick, and he just had an emotional outburst. Was it the best decision? No, it wasn't the best decision. Does he do this at 30? Probably not, but he's 25. And I'll go as far as this. If I was 25 playing in the biggest game in my life at that given time, in his situation, I probably would have dropped an F-bomb. I would not have been as professional as he was. He was rather professional, even though he was still extremely, extremely excited in a testosterone-charged sport, coming off the field with just a few seconds afterwards. They got to him maybe 10 minutes later, different reaction. You calm down a bit. There you go. That's the way I see it. It wasn't the best decision, but it really wasn't that bad what he did. It really wasn't. Not considering when you have all of these white guys running crazy. But again, it's the white man's house. You are a guest, and you must behave so. And when you do not behave that way, everybody has a problem with you. Back over to you, Seraph of Nerd.
All right. One of the rare cases we might disagree, actually. It's rare. But, Daryl, what are your thoughts on what the captain says? How do you see this deal with Mr. Richard Sherman?
Captain is 100% correct. I give Captain credit. I didn't think he would go where I was going to go, but he did. And I'll take it another step further, all right? The NFL all the time gets ragged on about, oh, these guys are bland. We need personality. NASCAR has the problem with their drivers, where fans say, we want personality. We want this. We don't want cookie-cutter answers. We want reality. We want true emotion. We want all of that. Well, Sherman gave it to you. Sherman gave you true emotion from that moment. The Crabtree Sherman beef goes back to a charity event that Sherman hosted, where Crabtree was downplaying Sherman at a charity event. All right, a charity golf thing, I believe, where he was talking smack to Sherman at a charity event. Okay, let's put this in context. All right, so now it's the biggest game of his life to date. All right, and he enables the interception to happen that puts his Seahawks in the Super Bowl. All right, that's where the choke on the field, which is the only thing I disagreed with, because I don't like seeing that thing, that choking sign on the field. You don't need that, all right? But that's where the taunting and stuff happened there on the field, okay? And then Erin Andrews comes out, and she is tasked. Her job is with Fox to get the most relevant player to the game's finale and get them on air right away, all right? Once you did it right away, that thing's going to happen. That's because you've still got all the testosterone in your system and all of that is still in there. There is no time to calm down and look at things rationally. He was still hyped up. He let loose, and he became a black man. Yeah, I did it. Yeah. And if you disagree with that, just go down to your local basketball court. Just go and take a look after you slam on somebody. You don't go, Chip Cheerio, that was a great shot, dude, or that was a great attempt trying to block me, but I just slammed it in your face. I'm sorry about that. No, you go, yeah, boy, I got you. I got you. Yeah, what are you going to do? You're going to try. That's essentially what Sherman did. But people took offense to that. All right, so I'm like, people took offense to that. Guess what? Madison Avenue, Hollywood, they didn't take offense to that. Why? Because all during the week, what are you seeing? The Sherman commercials for Nike on air. The Sherman Beats audio commercial where they actually used the word thug, which was shot about 4 months ago. It's now in heavy rotation. The Sherman is the a couple of the Sherman workout videos are now on TV. Why? Madison Avenue realizes he's hot now. We can make a buck off of him. And Sherman, to his credit, on his website, he's selling T-shirts with his mug on it, with some of the statements he made for like $25 to $35 a pop. He knows I'm going to strike while the iron's hot. But it's something I brought up in the past. When it came with Myron Rowe, folks, I told you, research the name Myron Rowe, all right? And for a positive black man that they said was too smart to play in the league, okay? Here is Sherman. Guess what? He went to Stanford. He's too smart to play in the league. But you guys didn't see that. All you guys are seeing are thugs. He's using his intellect to use your own stereotypes for him to make money off of y'all. And you guys don't even realize it out there. And I will end with this, okay? A great meme came out on Facebook and on the internet where it shows Richard Sherman and Justin Bieber side by side, where they list their rap sheets below them, and then they block out the bottom part. When you square down and you see the rap sheets, underneath Sherman, they say thug. Underneath Bieber, they say misguided kid. That's all you really need to know. If you're white and you're rich, you could do anything. What's the name of the disease? Affluenza? If you're black and you're somewhat successful and you show a little passion, you're a thug. That's why sometimes this country makes you disgraceful. And that's why, you know what? Hey, I hope Sherman and the Seahawks win over Mr. Manning. And no offense to you, Peyton, but this is to teach some of your fan base a lesson. And Sherman gets to hold the trophy and say whatever he wants on a national stage. Why? Because I challenge you. What are your perception of what a thug is? And by the way, as you're saying that, hey, another white mob movie is number one in the box office. What's a thug? Give me a break. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Wow.
All right. Listen, folks, this is the Grindhouse, courtesy of Afro Nerd Radio. Dave, do you have a dog in this race? What are your thoughts?
Well, like you, I'm not much of a sports guy, although I have been following the story. And I think that, you know, I don't have too much to add, and I really do got to get going in a minute, but I'm just so intrigued by this conversation. I think thug is just the media and a lot of certain types of people. It's just a new code word. It's like the same people that run around and call Obama Muslim, you know. They're trying to find really nice, polite ways to call us something that they just can't get away with saying in public anymore. And that's what I really think it comes down to. And I agree. I mean, there's so many people out there, whether they're athletes or entertainers who are white, who have done far worse things than what Sherman has done, you know, and they just get a pass. You know what I'm saying? They just get, oh, he's just a bad boy, you know, or he's just got a wild side. But when a black person does this, whether it's, again, an athlete or an entertainer, suddenly, you know, suddenly all hell breaks loose. And I just have a problem with that. And so to call this young man a thug, when you look at his pedigree, where you know, he went to school, he maintained what I believe was like a 3.9 GPA. The two just don't mix well. And it's like they're just not comfortable with black folks showing emotions outside of they want us to be humble, and they want us to they had the same problems with Muhammad Ali before they then turned around and branded him the greatest athlete of the 20th century. When he was speaking his mind, when he changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali, when he spoke out against the Vietnam War, suddenly he was a traitor, and he was a there's so many words they have for us, but they all have the same meaning. They all have the same negative connotation, and it goes back to what the captain said. It's make yourself at home, but just don't get too comfortable here.
Well, as always, I'm probably going to be the contrarian on this. I have a slightly different take. Not that I'm in complete disagreement with what you gentlemen have so aptly put out there. I thought that what you said makes a lot of sense, but I think we're in a bizarro world. It's not 1960. It's not 1970. Hell, it's not even 1980. I think things become more complicated, and I want to go to a groove, and then we'll get to my opinion. Dave, if you can hold on. If you can't, you may want to hear this one, because this one is if you can deconstruct what I'm about to say, then so be it. I'm not really disagreeing with what you gentlemen said, but I think if you flip it another way, it becomes an issue. It becomes an issue. Let's go to a quick groove, then we get back. I'm going to give you my opinion. And you mentioned, as other folks to mention, we know Bobby Knight was a fool, the famed Hoosiers coach. He used to throw chairs. We know about Bobby Riggs, the tennis player. We knew he has now we're hearing that he might have had ties to the mob. We know about John McEnroe. So you're correct. We know that they're quote-unquote thug white boys. Certainly. Certainly. So we'll get to it. This is Charles Bradley giving you some more urban alternative groove. Charles Bradley, and so appropriately titled, The World is Going Up in Flames. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
You can see it. You ever have this happen? This is how confusing it is. This is the practical application of what I'm talking about. Like a guy be out, it's happening a lot, guys. You be out at a club, bar, right? He's kicking with your boys, and a girl walks by, and man, she looks good. She looks good. Not good in that classical way. I mean, you know, I'm talking good, like she got half her ass hanging out her skirt. Her titties are all mashed together, popping out the top of her turtleneck and shit. And you with your buddies, right? You with your buddies, you got a couple drinks in you, and you see a girl like this, you might try to talk to her. This might not come out right. I don't know what you say, but damn, look at them titties! The girl gets mad at you. Wait a minute. Just because I'm dressed this way does not make me a whore. Which is true. Gentlemen, that is true. Just because they dress a certain way doesn't mean they are a certain way. Don't ever forget it. But ladies, you must understand that that is fucking confusing. Just is. Now that would be like me, Dave Chappelle the comedian, walking around the streets in a cop uniform. Somebody might run up on me. Oh, thank God. Officer, help us. Come on, they're over here. Help us. I'm like, oh, just because I'm dressed this way does not make me a police officer. You understand what I'm saying? It's like, all right, lady, fine. You are not a whore. But you are wearing a whore's uniform, I'll tell you that shit right now.
The great Dave Chappelle, folks. And before that, that was also the great Charles Bradley. The world is going up in flames, and it is. This is the Grindhouse Mashup, folks. We have a full house. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620. We got about 12 minutes remaining, so I will be brief and succinct, as always, as ever. I have great respect for all in attendance, but on occasion, we may agree or disagree. I'm not sure how I feel, in a way, to be honest, because I'm not a real sports guy. But I do like some sports. I do like football, but I'm not so deep in it. Personally, I'm just tired of loud black folk as a trope. I just don't like seeing that. I mean, we've seen it before. You know, they have still pictures of Mr. Sherman with his mouth open, loud, the loud crass guy. I pity the fool. It's the same trope. We go on and on about tropes and memes in comic book mythology on the show every week. How we're tired of when we look at it. The captain will pull me to the side once I'm happy and elated about some film, and he tells me, you know what, they did that before. and I'm like, damn it, you're right. Damn it if you're not right. And he brings me back to reality. I've seen the loud, obnoxious black person before. Now, his pedigree is something to be admired. Heck, we know Afro-Nerd math here. We have a gentleman, his name is Mr. David Walker. That's a name you can put on a resume, and it surely will not be tossed into the wastebasket. Now, it's another thing when they see him, but at least he gets through the door, okay? If it was Shaquan Jenkins, Shakisha Jackson, there may be issues with those names. So when I heard Richard Sherman, with a Stanford degree in communications and also matriculating toward a master's degree, I said, okay, wait a minute. His pedigree fits in with Afro-Nerdic mathematics, not unlike Pym particles. Makes sense. But when I heard this man, young man speak at the post game, oh, God, another loud black man. I got an issue with that. He fits into a trope. And as I played that clip because it's just confusing. You're wearing a boy's uniform. When does it become tired? I've used this before, I think on the last show, and I think even Q-Storm
He may be on hold. I'm going to bring him in. I said this before. Dr. Henry Louis Skip Gates from Harvard. Harvard professor, documentarian, learned scholar, one of the best. Tired from coming in from a visit from China, his neighbors said there was a black person attempting to get into his house. Rightfully, he didn't want to be bothered, but he did not have the comportment of a Harvard professor. He said, "Yo, mama's on the porch. Yo, mama's on the porch." Now, we didn't see his pedigree. Now, if he was going to be true to himself, yes, it would have been an aggravation, but it probably would have blown over. There wouldn't have been a big beer summit. Ultimately, there would not have been a beer summit. But he chose to act out. It's just confusing. I'm sorry, I didn't know. You confuse me. Black folks are going to have to give up, have to admit that some of what they are promulgating is effing confusing. If we've got to the point, is it nigga or is it nigger? I don't know.
World
we live in.
All right, Afro Nerd, let me just give you a situation, and you tell me you're thinking clear, okay? tell me this, okay? You've just been in a car that's going 100 miles an hour. You skidded on the highway. You're spinning around. You come to a stop without hitting anything. A person runs up to you with a microphone. Hey, sir, hey, Mr. Deber, are you okay? That looks amazing. Are you going to be lucid after that? Football players with a rush of testosterone, okay, are prime. It is a barbaric sport. It is an angry sport. It's a fighting sport without being a fighting sport. There is no way in a two-minute span you're going to come totally down and become and give a rational interview after playing an NFL game. I'm saying, I don't care who you are, okay? Now, quarterbacks can do that all the time. Why? They're not out there hitting people. They're not out there trash-talking for the most part, all right? Quarterbacks can do that fine. You're dealing with a cornerback. He is out there. Him and the receiver have been talking the whole game. Yeah, I'm better than you. Yeah, you're not going to, no. And you get the one-up to win the game. I'm sorry. Where's the clear rational interview going to be for that? And let's go back to the word thug, okay? Did Sherman hit anybody? No. Did Sherman shiv anybody? No. Was he dealing drugs on the field? No. This is where Mr. Walker and Captain is right. The word thug could just as well be the N-word here that people are using.
Okay.
Behavior.
All right, hold on. We got to bring in a call because I want to give him his due. Right. We'll bring in a call, but I want you to remind you of something. You're dealing with someone. Heck, I was Henry Pym's assistant on the Pym Particle Creation. So listen to who you're talking to. Black folks, listen, we have also, Dow, you have to admit, I shouldn't say we, some within the black community are making money off of the term thug in music as if it's an okay thing. You have women who are looking for a pretty thug. I'm looking for a thug like I'm looking for a vacation. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying, like Dave Chappelle, it's effing confusing. It's
all right, let's see the court.
Like nigga versus bigger and thug. We've seen thug on wax for damn near 20 years trying to make it palatable, but when they throw it back in your face and you see a black person with a Stanford pedigree and he's acting like Joe Blow from the corner, it's effing confusing. You must admit that. Let's go to the call. Give him his due. 484, welcome to the Grindhouse. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. It's hot up in here. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Q Storm. How you guys doing?
How you doing, Q?
Pretty good. Thank you, Q.
I'm sure we don't have a lot of time, so I'll be brief. You kind of stole my thunder with that last statement you made. I was going to say, one, you know, you look in our commercial hip-hop rap music from the 90s into the aughts, and, you know, you got songs like Thug Love, Thug Life, We Be Thuggin'. So we as a people, some of us, D-Bird would refer to them as a lower tier. I try to eschew that term. But some of us aspire to that culture. So it is confusing when we want to complain that this gentleman is being called a thug. Okay, now I don't think he's a thug. He may have been a thug for 30 seconds when he did that rant, but what do we want here? Are we going to allow commercialism to hold us up to the thug life that we are seemingly espousing? Or do we want to have thug have a negative connotation? Well, we want it to have a negative connotation, and we don't want it ascribed to people like Richard Sherman, then we need to eschew the term in our own lifestyle. That's one. Two, I've been watching sports for a long time. Why are we still talking about this? Maybe it's because we have never seen it. We don't see it that often. And maybe because it's not really condoned. It's not really done. It's not really understood. It's not really something that a professional athlete should do. So the fact that we're still talking about it is because we don't really see it happen that often because athletes should know better. I mean, reporters go to the losing coach. They go to the losing coach just like she went to Harbaugh. And they don't go batshit. Excuse me. They don't go crazy. They comport themselves. So what are we saying? Black men, we have to have an allowance that we can't control ourselves when the cameras are pointing on us? I don't understand. I'm with D-Bird on this. I think it's very confusing.
All right. Hold on. Let me interject. Let me interject real quickly. I think a lot of people are missing the point because you're dealing with sports, all right? The adrenaline is pumping. It's not just testosterone. It's adrenaline, all right? This is a different situation with this man 5 minutes afterwards. You understand what I'm saying? It's right after the fact. You're not in your right state of mind because when you're playing football, a lot of times, you're not in the right state of mind. These guys are psyched up. It's just like lifting a lot of weight. Let's say if you could bench press 250, you get psyched up, all of a sudden you do 290. You see this in weightlifting competitions. These guys are going crazy right before they lift the weight and right afterwards. And you see it with powerlifters. They stick the microphone in powerlifters' face, a lot of these white guys, sometimes black guys, and they're cursing and they're flipping. These are not bad people. They're not bad. It's because everything is running. It's racing. That's the point here. It's racing, and that's what no one does not see. They're not seeing that. It's racing. It's racing. I
so
get
we got
the
a couple,
meme that we're selling thug music and everything else. I get that. But you have to understand the circumstances that this is happening underneath. That's why it happens.
I've seen a lot
and
of people win sporting
media,
events, sporting games, and they don't go off like that. Hold on. Let me finish.
Let me finish. That's why the media, if you look at the articles that they're spitting, they went back CNN. CNN and a few others, they went back and said, this man is not a thug because Ray. They realized. You understand? They went back to do the damage control for all the white people who were saying that he was a thug. You have to understand what's going on here. That's all I'm saying.
One quick thing because we've got about a minute remaining. Quickly, I don't really disagree with what the captain's talking about, but the problem is we are in confusing times. When you talk about what happened in the Miami locker room 2 months ago with another Stanford grad, you have a white gentleman that was allowed to say the N-word freely in that locker room, and the black players co-signed on that, and then the outside world is looking at that like, what? This is effing confusing. We're dealing with a different time where we can't be – we should be consistent on these matters, and for some reason we cannot. That's what makes it – I'm not saying right or wrong. I mean, listen, I'm going to concede to those who know more about sports and the passion of sports. But you must confess that this is, like the great Dave Chappelle says, it's effing confusing.
Well,
black folks need to own up to some of this because we're feeding into the confusion. We can't always go into this is racism when, pal, you have people like Kanye selling your Confederate flags at a concert. That then he gets called the N-word recently. Then he wants to be a victim. Can't have it both ways. I'm just saying. It's confusing.
I'm just saying if we're going to use the word thug, use it across the whole board. Use it across the dynamic.
I agree.
I want thug for baseball players that intentionally throw at other guys. I want thug for goons in hockey. When there's the two valiant warriors battling out. I go like, that's thug behavior. Use it across
the board. Don't let thug be a symbol of the word end. That's just like a synthetic and almost human. Hey, call me what you really want to call me. You know, don't stop with the code words. If it's a thug behavior, that, then use it straight across the board.
I just want to say I've seen a lot of sporting events. I'll repeat myself. And I've seen reporters stick a microphone in athletes' face right after they came off the field. I've never seen that before in a football game. So a lot of other athletes have been able to comport themselves. So this whole testosterone thing, I don't know if I can go with that.
Q, I have. Bart Scott, 2 years ago, I'm a Jets fan. Bart Scott. All right, I have James Harrison, Steelers. I have, but the difference is they're black too. They come up right in. It's different when you're playing hard on the field or you're a quarterback. Quarterbacks get those interviews all the time because they're the glory boys, but they don't have to tackle nobody. They don't have that aggression. All right, when you have that aggression, I'm telling you, Q, those interviews are out there. Just look up Bud Scott. I can't wait.
All right, listen, gentlemen, we're going to have to reconvene for the Midweek in Review show. Mr. Walker, as always, absolute pleasure. Hopefully we will hook
great
up when
show.
You're in town again.
Thank you very much.
I got to say something else.
Pleasure.
And just quickly, folks, I got to just put this in there. Again, this is a generation that will tell you that the nigga word is different. It's different. But if a white person says it like Lena Dunham or Lisa Lampanelli, all of a sudden it's back to the same old meaning. Effing confusing. On that note, I could do this all day with this confusing world we live in. Anyway, it's been real. We'll reconvene on the midweek on Wednesday. Q, as always, appreciate it. This is New Yorican Soul. It's all right. I feel it. See you on Wednesday.